Welcome to College Football Roundtable, your source for college football coverage, including major storylines,
playoffs,
can't miss game previews, and picks each week. Join your hosts, Dan, Rob, and Jordan at the roundtable for a show unlike anything else. As for Football presents the College Football Roundtable.
All right. Well, we've got one person watching, so we're getting started. Audience of one, we appreciate you being here. Welcome back to the As for Football College Football Roundtable. Hey, we've separated the pretenders from the contenders this weekend. The SEC and the Big 12 are wide open and full of controversy. I mean, I think there's enough to be said. We were talking about it before the show. Is there any elite teams in the SEC? If so, drop them in the chat because we want to see your opinions, because right now I'm not seeing it. I think we're going to be interesting, having some interesting finales this week, especially going into rivalry week. And then at the end of the season, we got 2 weeks left in the 2025 or 2024 regular season, which is hard to believe. Florida Gators took out Ole Miss, and Kansas becomes the first unranked team in the history of FBS football to beat three top 25 AP teams in a row, which is pretty impressive. So they had Iowa State, BYU, and then Colorado. So, you know, unfortunate for Kansas, they weren't able to do it at home. They had to do it at Chiefs Stadium, but maybe there's a little Chiefs mojo going on. I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. But what's up, Trash Talkers? Welcome back to College Football Roundtable. I'm your host, Rob, in Fayetteville, North Carolina. We got Dano Icabesa calling to you out of Coastal Connecticut, and Trigger Joe from the home of the Big House. How we doing, guys, and what'd you guys end up watching this weekend?
Decent weekend for me, at least until the Army game got like 3 minutes in and you could see that the offense just wasn't working. Then I was sad. Had some cadets over to watch the game. We watched a lot of ball, too. Indiana at Ohio State, Ole Miss at Florida, Penn State at Minnesota, Colorado at Kansas, ECU at North Texas. I told you guys that was going to be a game, and it turned out that way. Yeah. Texas A&M at Auburn, and obviously the Army game. Plus, I got my stitches out, got back in the water Sunday afternoon, which was good after, you know, watching Army get killed to work some of that frustration out. So, yeah, man, my takeaway is that a lot of home teams won, which I take to mean that teams are tired and not traveling is good.
Yeah, that's fair. Joe, how about you?
Yeah, I watched the Michigan game versus Northwestern, which was a good win for Michigan. But I did catch 90% of the Ohio State versus Indiana game. And I'll be honest, it was nice to see the Indiana head coach get brought down back to reality. Even if it was by the Buckeyes, that guy has the most punchable face when he talks, and he's getting way too big for his britches calling Indiana the next superpower. But I digest, as Ollie G would say. I'll talk about that later. But, dude, give me a freaking break. Superpowers don't get blown out by anybody for any reason ever. They may not win every game, but they don't look like that. Unfortunately, I caught a bit of Notre Dame versus the Army game, and I think I was kind of in the same seat Dano was. It was pretty clear that there was a matchup problem on offense early. So it was still a great season, nothing to hang your head about, and Army still got the Navy game coming up. So, this Army team has one loss. Definitely not something to hang their heads about.
Yeah, for sure. That is a true statement. So I watched a lot of football again this weekend, kicked it off, of course, with ECU and UNT. Great game, you know, and thanks ECU for continuing to you know, trend upward, because that helps everybody in the view of their overall season. I mean, they're a good team. I mean, they're turning the ball over and still winning. Like, if you turn the ball over against North Texas, normally you lose, and they still came back and won that one. Watch the Buckeyes made Indiana look pretty average, man. They look not so great. There's a pretty significant difference in that matchup. Watch the Buffs lose to a surprisingly solid upward trending Kansas team. So Kansas is on a roll right now. I mean, it would suck to have to play them, because I think they're just playing well right now. Their offense is clicking, and you know, most of their guys that were injured at the early part of the season have now healed up. So they're healthy and they're hunting. And they have basically gone over to Purdue, punched them in the face, and stole the Spoilermakers mantra from them for this season. Kansas is the team to watch, at least as far as, you know, upsetting their opponents. PJ Fleck, man, almost pulled another one, man. Fake punt. Saved the day for Penn State and kept their playoff hopes and dreams alive. Watched, the SEC continue to commit fratricide, both with the Ole Miss game and Bama at OU. That was embarrassing, man. I felt bad for Bama. Nick Saban is laughing himself all the way to the bank because he's like, hey, I left because I saw that this was coming, like straight up. And then end of the night watching Army and Notre Dame again. I think, you know, said the same thing that I noted that like there's people are just getting tired. You know, the road is starting to get on them. I think when you look at particularly the left coast teams that got to travel all the way to the central part of the country to play football, I think that's going to start having impact. I mean, you saw it, you know, and even with a short trip from Oregon to Wisconsin, they did not look, they looked mortal playing against Wisconsin. And so it's going to be interesting to see how the rest of the season plays out. But somebody that is not tired and is always looking for a home is Jocelyn Bradley. So, here's the market for a home here at the PCS to Fort Liberty. We have the realtor for you. Jocelyn is a military veteran who spent her career in Army logistics there. She discovered a passion for making a difference in people's lives. She's committed to helping her clients find their dream homes when they're in the market, and she provides exceptional service when she's working for you. Jocelyn also has an extended network of veteran realtors who can support you if you're moving anywhere else into the country. And, she should be your first call. So if you're in the market to look for a house, call Jocelyn. She's decided to support Ask for Football this season, and she's the right person to get you into the home of your dreams. Go to our Ask for Football website. There's a business card on the side. Click on it. Reach out, connect, and she will get you into the next place that you can rest your head, particularly after some rough college football on the weekend. College football, back to the show, and over to you, Dan, for Service Academy standings.
Well, yeah, we talked about Army. I don't know how much we're going to dissect and relive that game tomorrow on the show, but we're gonna try to put it in some kind of perspective. Navy, you know, they were off. They've got a big matchup against ECU and Greenville coming up this Saturday. And it's interesting because they get a bye week and then ECU and then another bye week and then the Army-Navy game, which is the exact opposite of what Army's doing right now, which is probably the biggest thing that's got me concerned in a larger sense about the way the season is playing out. And then Air Force, you know, they won again. They beat Nevada. They're going to close out their season at San Diego State with the chance to go 5-7. I don't know if y'all noticed, but Air Force turned it around in the bye week before the Army game, and Army beat them still, but they have not looked like the same team since that bye week when they went to that new quarterback. And, you know, I hesitate to say that they're good, but boy, if they had just figured it out against Colorado State, they'd be going bowling right now, probably.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's something to be said. And we talked about it earlier in the season about, you know, people gelling after transfer portal or big moves. And like in Air Force's case, they lost a whole bunch of their super seniors. So they had the guys that took the COVID year and hung out for a little bit longer, and their team was very, very young. And so now you're starting to see, you know, a glimpse of what the future could look like. Quite frankly, if they continue to struggle, I'm okay with it. But, you know, the reality of it is as a football program, the better you gel, you know, you should be playing better towards the second half of the season. And they are doing exactly that.
They look like a completely different team, like completely different than they looked in, say, the first four or five games of the season. It is not the same. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's mostly the same players, but I guess if you want an indictment of the coaching staff, it took them half the season to realize who some of their starters should have been, which is in contrast to the Army team, which also had eight new faces on the defensive side of the football and figured out who their starters should be in summer camp.
Yeah. And again, I think that has something to do, like coaching does have a lot to do with it. Yeah. But I also think like performance on the field, and there's probably other things that we don't see as people watching the football program as like, hey, what is really going on behind the scenes? But I mean, the trend has been if you lose to Army, you switch out to your number two quarterback and you start winning. I mean, that's happened. It happened for ECU as well, you know. So if you look at their records before the Army game and their records post-Army, they had to make some adjustments to their team because they weren't getting it done. And it's working out for them both. You know, ECU, I would say ECU and, you know, Air Force are trending upward towards the end of the year. And that's a good place to be. You know, ideally you get to go bowling. ECU is going to bowling. And like they have a opportunity to put a stamp on their season. If they beat Navy, you know.
Yeah, they could get to nine wins.
Yeah, a 9-3 team going to a bowl game, that, you know, that's nothing to shake a stick at, particularly the way that their season started. So,
yeah. Yeah, 8-4 in the they'd be 8-4 in the regular season with a chance to win a bowl game, which I would pick them to win, by the way. And you must have heard they hired that that interim off coach, the defensive coordinator, to be the new head coach.
Yeah,
good hire.
Yeah, that's smart. I mean, yeah.
Not to mention that's a banner year when NC State, Wake, yeah. North Carolina, and Duke are all having mid-range seasons. Pull off 9 wins like that. I've always said it. ECU has a ton of support.
Yeah, they got a team. That team is really talented.
Yeah, and if you want to know more about ECU football, this is an unsolicited plug, but go check out the Boneyard podcast, because those guys are, you know, friends of the show, and they do a really good deep dive into ECU. And like, the reality of it is like, when you really think about it, ECU has the best record of all the collegiate football teams in North Carolina right now, which, you know. Yeah, and like I said at the beginning of the season, I told Dano, I was like, yeah, everybody's talking about ECU around here, and, you know, they didn't look like it at first, but now they do. So it should be interesting. Of course, going back to the American, game of the week is going to be Navy at ECU. I think that's probably the most interesting contest to watch. The Mids have been up and down the second half of the season. Injuries to Blake Horvath have been causing some significant issues with timing in their offense, so it'll be interesting to see what's going on. Navy's gone 1-4 in the second half of the season, and, you know, they look to challenge ECU's that strung together 4 straight wins, and they are trying to close their season 8-4, as we previously mentioned, and they're playing at home, you know. And as we talked about at the beginning of the show, home teams tend to have the advantage towards the end of the year, so we will see what happens. You know, they didn't look great against North Texas, but they were still able to keep it together and pull the win. And quite frankly, I think the Pirates are going to punish Navy.
Listen, they played a bad quarter.
Yeah.
And they got down 21-0. And then after that, you know, they outscored that other team 40-0 or something like that.
For sure. And I'm looking to see ECU take it out on Navy for stealing the skull and crossbones to put on their Navy uniforms. So if the Pirates one up them for that, I will surely take it. Other games of note in the American, we'll preview this one on the Army football shows. UTSA at Army. This one's going to be a weird one because the Black Knights are coming off of a loss against Notre Dame, but UTSA has been bad on the road. They're 0-5 on the road. They're 6-0 at home. So yeah. Advantage Mikey Stadium, typically, because Army plays well at home, but the other part of it is UTSA has not been traveling well this season, so that should be a very interesting matchup in Memphis.
One more note on that one, Rob.
Yeah.
25 degrees with the wind chill at kickoff. Woo!
Yeah.
I mean, we're going to be freezing our little asses off out there.
Yeah, bundle up for sure. That is going to be some coastal breeze coming in. And then, of course, Memphis and Tulane looks good as well. I think that'll be another good contest. Both of those teams are kind of mid-range this year, but I think they match up fairly evenly in that contest. So I would not take the under on that
Memphis
one.
Memphis can do us the biggest favor in the world by getting a win, because if Army could stay home for that American Conference Championship game and play it in 20-degree weather, good God, that is a different animal.
Yeah,
like than having to go down to Tulane.
Yeah, nobody wants to play in New Orleans.
No.
There's something about the water down there. It's not good for Army football. And speaking of rankings, pass it over to Joe for the CFP rankings for the week.
All right, number one, we got Oregon still. The Ducks stay put as they played no one last week. They have the Huskies coming into town of Washington on Saturday. And number two is we got Ohio State. The Buckeyes handled Indiana in what was supposed to be a closer game, if you listen to Indiana's head coach. 38-15, and the Buckeyes roll as they prepare for the game this Saturday versus Michigan and Columbus. I'm sure there's some comeuppance on the way for the Wolverines. And number three, we got Texas. The Longhorns played well against a good Kentucky defense and handled business 31-14. Texas travels to play A&M in a huge rivalry game this Saturday that has much more meaning this year than it has in previous seasons. At number four, we got Notre Dame. They jump up 5 as the Irish took care of Army 49-14 in the Yankee Stadium and received some love in the polls as they jump up 5 spots. Speaking of rivalries, they travel to play USC this Saturday, and those two teams low-key hate each other. I think it's going to be a decent game. USC can hang some points. They just don't have a very good defense. At number 5, we got Penn State. The Nittany Lions got a good scare on the road again, but squeaked out a win in Minnesota, 26-25. I believe someone on this panel called that a trap game last week. Penn State has Maryland coming into town on Saturday. Number 6, we got Georgia. The Bulldogs beat up UMass 59-21 and keep the rivalry week rolling as they travel to play Georgia Tech this Saturday. Also a game where two teams really want to beat up on each other. Number seven, we got Miami. The Canes looked good against Wake Forest and came out with a big win, 42-14. Miami travels to play Syracuse this Saturday. At number eight, we got the SMU Mustangs. They smacked around Virginia 33-7. SMU has Cal on Saturday. At number nine, we got the Tennessee Volunteers. Got out some frustration as they abused UTEP 56-0. Tennessee travels to play Vandy on Saturday. That should be a good one. At number 10, we got Indiana. Unfortunately for the Hoosiers, their coach on the microphone wasn't enough to get the win. Otherwise, they would have been just fine, but they laid an egg on the field, and Ohio State dominated, as I already said, 38-15. Indiana plays Purdue this Saturday at home. At number 11, we got Boise. We talk about a scare on the road. Boise was heavily favored going into a game against Wyoming on the road, and it was much closer than we thought it would be. But they got the W 17-13. They play Oregon State at home this Saturday. And number 12, we have the Arizona State Sun Devils. I believe this is the first time I've mentioned Arizona State's name with a number next to it in the top 10. But well-deserved as the Sun Devils beat BYU 28-23. And to cap off rivalry week, they travel to play Arizona on Saturday.
Yeah, that should be an interesting game. Like Cam Scataboo, man. That dude has like the coolest football name ever.
I love watching that guy play, man.
Yeah, and he was running over everyone. Like, he was a big difference in that contest, even though it looked a lot closer than it was. And then the ending of that game was pretty nuts as well.
Like Mike Allstott.
Yeah, the ending of that game was insane. And like, it's probably a topic that we need to deep dive, but like, I could rant about officiating quite a bit because there's been some really questionable calls this season. And I think it's getting harder and harder to find quality refs because access to like social media and things like that, because like these guys will get bombed and have to get escorted out of the, out of the stadium if they make a questionable call. And sometimes, you know, we just want to watch the players play, man. Like I've seen some like half-baked targeting calls or chop block calls or you know, some goofy stuff. And it's frustrating to me because like 2 years ago we were talking about targeting and how crazy it was. Now that those numbers have gone down and they aren't ejecting players after everything, and I get it, it's about player safety, but now the refs got to find something else stupid to call, I guess. And it's just my frustration with college football at this time. But back to the AP top 10. We're top 25 losses for the year. We're at 60. We've got 2 weeks left. We're probably going to be closer to 70 at the end of the season. As mentioned, Indiana lost to Ohio State. Army lost to Notre Dame. Bama lost to Oklahoma, which like doesn't sound as bad until you look at the score, 24-3. Like they had zero offense in that game. Ole Miss lost to Florida 24-17. And guess what, folks? After all the shade that we threw on Billy Napier and the Gators, they are now bowl eligible. So
yeah, who saw that coming after the way the season started for them? That was nuts. Yeah. Like that was shocking. That was literally a shocking game.
They just started creeping up, and it's like, okay, maybe that defense is for real. Okay, that's 2 weeks in a row. Okay, that's 3 weeks in a row, and then you look at who they're doing it against. It's like, dude, this can't be a fluke. Not in the SEC, it can't. I mean,
even though they're not elite this year,
that's still a murderer's row of good, solid programs they play.
Yeah, for sure.
I forget the quarterback's name from Ole Miss, but he made some very questionable decisions during that game.
Jackson Dart, thank you. He had a horrible game. So, like, he threw his name the right way. He literally threw an interception that got called back because like the guy like either didn't control the ball on the way to ground or something like that.
Yeah.
And then like they overturned it, and immediately the next play he just like chucks it into the defense. So it was like, okay, like why would you do that? Like you just got it back and then you gave it away again. Moving on, you had Arizona beating BYU, which we talked about. I think that was one of the most controversial endings of the season that I saw. And again, it's something that has it's like the officials don't like BYU. I mean, they got the break in the Utah game, but since then they've been trying to pay back, you know, the universe by making some crazy calls. Auburn is ready for the Iron Bowl by beating Texas A&M in 4 overtimes. Like, if you have not watched that, just go watch the highlights of the overtime period, and you'll be impressed with the amount of football that was played for that. And then, of course, the score is not indicative of actually how bad it was. You know, 37-21, Kansas Jayhawks beat the Buffs, but they were fairly in control of that game for 3.5 quarters. And, you know, they got some garbage time scores. Again, you know, you don't like to see that, but Travis Hunter, 1,000-yard has 1,000 yards of receiving this season. Had 2 touchdowns of the game. Played great. I still don't understand. You know, it's going to be tough to figure out who's going to get the Heisman Trophy because Ashton Jente is playing his butt off. Like, credit, dude's rushing all over the place.
Yeah,
but you know, when you look at just like incredible feats on the field, like Travis Hunter, like here's the way that I look at it. If you took Travis Hunter with his talent and put him anywhere else, he'd be playing both ways on any other team in D1 football. I don't know if Ashton Jente would be the starting running back at some other universities outside of the Group of Five.
Come on. Come on. Are you serious?
I'm calling it. I'm just being honest, you know,
I don't love that one, Rob. Sorry.
But I'm in for Travis Hunter to win the Heisman Trophy. It's a shame that it has to be a controversy like this, because when you have two talented guys like that, they both should be rewarded. And
well, that's fine, but there's only going to be one winner. But yeah,
I see what you're saying about Jente. He'd have better competition at other schools that he'd be playing against and that he'd be fighting for carries, but he would still be elite in my mind. And the last guy to get 25 touchdowns at running back one in college football won the Heisman.
Yeah, so, and that's fair.
He's there. So have a great case in my mind. Go ahead. Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. I keep cutting you off, but this is like the hottest take we've had all season. So I feel like we can't just let this go. If he was, have you watched Boise State's offensive line? Like, these dudes are not, they are not Michigan. You know what I'm saying? Like, if he was running at Michigan, that would be a different, like, that's a step change in offensive line help.
They do a lot of zone blocking, which is basically set up for like Barry Sanders kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I got that.
Because it was like, we're going to hand it off to you. We don't know where the hole is going to be. You pick.
Yeah. You figure it out.
Yeah. Well, and
you figure it out. Hot potato.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. And the only thing I'm saying is, like, when you look at defenses, it's the same argument as why, like, you know, we used to say you can't run the option in the pros. You know, athletes are too, it's too different on the edge, right? Now, that being said, I'm not saying anything like dude's going to break Barry Sanders' rushing record. Absolutely believe that. He's got 2 weeks left to do it. I think he will. You know, does he win the Heisman Trophy? I don't know. You know, that's the thing. Honestly, with the sports writer bias that we have, Ashton Jente probably will win the Heisman Trophy just as a, you know, an FU to Colorado. Well,
that certainly might turn out to be the case. No real argument with me from there.
You know, my main problem still is I think there is bias based on how many losses your team has for an individual award.
Yes.
That bothers me.
Absolutely.
Unless you're a QB and you came out and really stunk it up. Like Jackson Dart throwing 3 picks in 2 minutes for Ole Miss. Like, that's like, okay, that game might have cost you the Heisman. But like at running back or in Travis Hunter's position, I don't think record should come into play.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and look at it this way. Statistically, Travis Hunter has played twice as many football games as everyone else, just by the number of plays that he's been on the field. And so that in and of itself makes him unique enough, in my opinion, to win the Heisman Trophy. All that being said, like I said, the sports writer bias is probably going to come in, and it'll be like the dude that we least expect. It's going to be whoever the top quarterback is going to win it, just because sports writers have that bias still to this day, regardless. Anyway, speaking of unbiased opinions, let's go over to Joe for his Blue Falcon of the Week.
Well, I mean, no surprise here. I've already mentioned him like 4 times. I didn't really find anybody that did anything embarrassing, so I'm going to pick somebody that makes me feel good to tear down because he drives me nuts. Head coach Indiana Hoosiers, Kurt Cignetti. You're this week's Blue Falcon. I don't know if it's the way you chomp your gum with that wry smirk when anybody asks you a question about Indiana Hoosiers football, or if it's the fact that you've called Indiana the next emerging superpower in college football, hell, maybe it's the I win Google me comment that drives me nuts about you. But if Ryan Day and the Buckeyes didn't lift the veil for you, let me remind you that you haven't won anything yet. Not a Big Ten title, not a Rose Bowl, and most definitely not a Natty. Those are things the superpowers do, Kurt. This isn't James Madison or Elon University, not to insult those fine establishments. This is Big Ten football, and I honestly feel like your mouth has turned Indiana from what should be one of the feel-good stories of the year into a team that a lot of people want to see lose for no other reason than the fact that they can't stand you on the microphone. For that reason, and the fact that your walk wasn't like your talk on Saturday, and the fact that your microphone skills translated into your team laying a goose egg on the field, you are this week's Blue Falcon, and the next time you have a mic in front of you, make sure your team can back up what you're saying.
Thanks, Joe. That's fair.
That was from the Big Ten as well. Like, you're not coming in here and moonwalking your way through.
Yeah, sorry. I think it's always interesting to see, you know, what coaches have to do, and there's always going to be an emerging team, right? We get it, but it's also, you know, it's also something that that's why we play the game. You know, like if we listen to the pundits or we listen to the sports writers, like Indiana had that one in the bag before the game even kicked off.
It was the halftime interview that did it for me. Just got to play our football. I was like, what's so funny right now, dude? What do you know that we don't know? And why aren't you doing it? You know, so it was that for me. I get a little triggered.
Well, that and the fact that, like, hey, man, like you had the first, you know, to put it in context, you had the first punt return touchdown in Ohio State in the last decade on your team. Like, that's not an emerging superpower. You know, there's just certain things that happen in the play on the field.
It was very clear that Ohio State had them covered on defense, and they absolutely could not pick up a blitz to save a life. They literally, every blitz got home for Ohio State. It was like watching Aiden Hutchinson and David Ojabo against Ohio State with C.J. Stroud that year, where they just kept getting through. And I was surprised at it.
Yeah.
So I honestly thought that Indiana was going to play them a little tougher.
Yeah. Well, I think I expected that as well. I think everybody did, to be honest, and Indiana as well. All right. So the topic this week is, what are your thoughts on the playoff committee's decisions up to this point? I'll lead, pass it to Joe, and then kick it over to Dan. So I think it's really simple. Like, again, you know my stance on sports writers. It boggles the mind that these guys are paid analysts to watch football games because they clearly do not watch them, or they decide at the beginning of the season, like, oh, I'm hanging my shingle with this team, and come hell or high water, it's going to be Clemson and the Natty because doggone it, Paul Feinbaum said so. You know, more in his case, it's more like Bama. But you understand what I'm saying? Like, there's dudes that are in the tank from the beginning of the season. Playoff committee, I'm going to make it super easy for you. Eliminate all controversy. And if somebody has a weird, squirrely record, who cares if they are a conference championship?
Thank you.
They win a conference championship. If they go with that, you've got your Power Four conferences, your Group of Five conferences. Those are nine teams that go in. Your top independent team, preferably one that is undefeated, you know, gets a bid. And then you have two at-large bids that you can wrestle with. No one's going to be happy, but if you take all nine conference champions, the top independent team in the season, and then the two at-large bids that pass the eye test, then I think college football as a whole would be happy. But leaving this decision into the hands of sports writers and a bunch of ADs that will screw over a good team just because they're in their conference is not the way that it should be done. Because, you know, up until Bama lost to OU, people were talking about Bama with two losses in the top 12 going to the playoff. Like, why? There's better teams out there. I would much rather take a risk on, you know, I'd much rather take a risk on a freaking, you know, 9-1 Army team versus 8-2 Colorado, right? Their records are better. And I like both teams. You know, I'm in the bag for both teams, but objectively, I could look at them and be like, okay, I think, you know, given their season or given their ranking, this team would match up better with the other team. Or, you know, if I'm using the money line to do that, I'm going to reward the fan bases for showing up for the teams that win week in and week out. And I'm just, you know, there's a very simple way to fix it, and I don't think that they will. Over to you, Joe.
Yeah, I hate to sound boring or vanilla, but I completely agree with what you said, Rob. I think that you take the conference winners, the best independent, and two at-larges, and I think that gives it structure and a clear set of rules in black and white, and it brings meaning back to the conference championship games. Not to say that they don't have meaning, but they don't have as much leverage as I believe they should. And I just don't trust the sports writers of America to get it right every time. If it's left up to humans, there'll be human error. I do think that the system of doing things as it pertains to the 12-team system hasn't completely evolved yet into what it finally will be because it's so new. But just to touch on that one thing you said about, you know, a coach might have a bias or an AD might have a bias. The year Michigan split the national title with Nebraska, they split it because their Tennessee's coach put them fourth because Peyton Manning didn't win the Heisman and Charles Woodson did. And that's an inside story, but it's well vetted and well backed up by a lot of people that said, yeah. So, I mean, literally it affected splitting the national title with those clowns. And it's just there is bias towards the school that whose colors you bleed.
Yeah, that's fair. And I think we need to, for the sake of the sport, you have to be as objective as possible. Over to you, Dan. What are your thoughts?
I mean, objective got on the train and left the hell out of town several years ago, man. I mean, okay, so I've said this in the Firsty Club a lot in the past couple of weeks, and my sense of where we are now is that there are two conferences trying to make this a two-league invitational. And if they could get it to be like the NFL playoff rules between the SEC and the Big Ten with six from each, NFL playoff style, that is precisely what they would like. And they do not care about giving any of those other slots away. And if they have to gobble up the rest of college football in order to get to that point, that is for sure where they like to go. I don't love it. I got to be honest with you. I do not love it. You know, right now you got the rest of college football trying to hang around the edges. And listen, I'm an Army fan. Army had to join a conference because of all of this insanity. Couldn't schedule games. And you know, okay, you get plenty of power five, you know, high level power five teams to put you on their schedule and take six losses that way. But I don't, yeah, we're struggling. As they say on Twitter, the SEC has never lost a hypothetical game. You know, you just go up to Joe Sportswriter and go, is Alabama going to beat X? Yes. Don't even play the games. Just make it an invitational.
Yeah, that's fair. I think that, like,
listen, we did not need to expand the playoff. There has not been four teams with a legitimate chance to win the college football title except for last year. That was the only time. And even Florida State getting left out, I don't feel that bad in hindsight.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. If it was legitimately based off of, you know, best record or best performance, and, like, but even looking at it last year, what hurt Florida State was like, oh, well, their quarterback got hurt, so they're not going to be ready for the playoff. Okay, that's possible, but, like, we've seen backups win games too, you know, and that's that's part of the problem is because, like, it allows for too much subjectivity. So I could legitimately go into the panel and be like, oh, hey, guys, guess what? The starting left tackle for Ohio State is hurt. Maybe we don't put him in because that guy, you know, is the, you know, offensive tackle of the year and he's not going to be in the game. So that's going to change the calculus of how we do things.
Ahead, that's a great point because Zach Zinner was easily the highest draft pick lineman on Mel Kiper's board for Michigan last year. And he broke his leg in the Ohio State game. And Michigan one seed. So I'm just saying it's crazy if by position how that happens.
So if we were going to go back to a 14 playoff this year, we'd have number one, Oregon, number two, Ohio State, number three, Texas, number four, Penn State, and number five, Notre Dame, with Ohio State and Penn State all set to hash it out in a Big Ten Conference championship game. I mean, assuming Texas wins the SEC championship. But I don't actually think it would be difficult to come up with the four best teams this year if you were only trying to come up with four. And if you only had to come up with two, it would be – you know, probably Big Ten champion versus SEC champion in all likelihood. And that's not even difficult.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing is it's like the other part of it is you got to give some weight to the postseason. Right.
Yeah.
And we can all sit here and say, like, who paid attention to their bowl mania last year? Nobody. Cause the bowl games were terrible. Like, nobody paid attention to the bowl games. Like, the only bowl games that were any good were like, hey, these guys are 6-6. These guys are 7-5. those dudes were duking it out because they actually wanted to have a legitimate football contest. But if you won 10 games last year and you were in a bowl game, they were sleepwalking, with the exception of, you know, Georgia trying to make a statement with Kirby Smart because they didn't make it in. So they freaking mollywopped freaking Florida State, which was like the seed being planted for the rest of their season this year. But at the end of the day, you know, vast majority of the AP top 25 ranked teams, if they weren't playing against ranked opponents, like they didn't, the bowl games were like, yeah, I'm holding out. I'm not playing.
The best bowl games were the group of five bowl games by a mile, by a mile.
And that's another huge thing in college football. Now that's the more we get closer there, the farther away we get from when players first started doing it, the more accepted it is and the farther out it's being accepted. Cause Will Johnson has sat out, I don't know, 8 or 9 games in a row now for Michigan, and he's been able to play, and he's number one on Mel Kiper's board to get drafted. He's not going to ruin his draft stock. He could play. Will Johnson could play for Michigan right now. He's just not gonna, and he's not going to.
Oh, that's on your boosters, man. They got to write him a bigger check.
Hey, they're writing Bryce Underwood a big check next year. We haven't talked about that, but they just, Michigan just stole the number one recruit in the country from LSU over the weekend as Bryce Underwood commits to Michigan for a NIL deal worth more than 2 times what Shedeur Sanders is making. And he hasn't even taken a college snap yet. Wow. That's amazing. $10 million.
Wow.
Better be real, kid.
Yeah, good on you.
Bro, you don't want to come in and stink up that job after that, because that's when Michigan throws money around, they expect things, and they've made a statement with that deal. Shedeur Sanders is making 2 times more than the next guy below him, and he's the highest in the country at 4.3. They're paying this kid 10.
Yeah. Jeez. So it'll be interesting to see, because that's one of the things that
he's all the rave in the state of Michigan right now. So.
Yeah, we were talking to some college football nerds over the weekend, and one of the things that everybody was, we were talking about is, to this day, if you really want to know how NIL should be structured, go back and look at Ricky Williams' rookie year deal when he came out of Texas and signed in the NFL. And the reason why I say that is because he basically got a baseline salary that was the league minimum, and then he had different gates that paid him bonuses for success along the way.
The problem with that is that NIL is not supposed to be pay to play.
Yeah. So. Yes. But unfortunately, I can give you a bonus if you get, you know, 1,000 yards rushing. I can have that money set aside. You know what I mean? And that's
the problem. What he's saying is it's not supposed to. But they're still going to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. We are totally in the ungoverned space of college football. Oh, and so that's true. I think that there's probably some ways, but that, like, I would like to see some kind of structure like that and say, hey, look, you will have a minimum of 12 games on your contract or whatever it is, just to ensure that the guys are playing. Because, like, dude, Cam Rising, he's going to be back next year. Like, he had, right? He had no incentive.
He had get a job.
Break, and that's going to be Bo Nix's record of being drafted into the NFL as a 31-year-old rookie.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Like, that's the thing, is these dudes are so old, they're going to be collecting AARP after their second season. Like, and
Bo Nix is having a good rookie year. He should be better. He's older than Daniel Jones.
Yeah, he's like the oldest guy. He's like the oldest rookie in the history of the NFL. But
amazing.
Speaking of old rookies, we got a guy that's not a rookie that can help you get a great mortgage if you're looking to refinance your home. Over to you, Dano.
Craig Oxane is the vice president of residential lending. He just switched companies, so he's no longer with New American Funding. I won't spoil where he is, but he's a member of the West Point class of 1994, licensed to lend in all 50 states, but based out of Chicago. Friends, he is one of the most successful VA lenders in the country. He's going to offer you super competitive rates to give you the best deal he possibly can, which is important because the mortgage process is freaking confusing. Rates move all over the place. You got to figure out whether you want to do some adjustable thing or lock in. You got to sign all this paperwork. Like, you'd really like to work with an actual person who you can talk to on the phone and not just some call center or random big box bank or some mindless website. And this is how the West Point network functions. Craig is helping us stay in business here at Azure Football. We're trying to introduce you to the guy that can help you get a mortgage. When you need to work with somebody you can trust. And of course, as we say all the time, Craig does not charge lenders lending fees for veterans. That's a huge savings. It's like $1,300. $1,300 is a lot of money. You should totally save yourself that money if you can. So Craig Oxane, residential lending. Like I said, his website is going to be updated here in the next week or so, because he's switching to a new job, a new company. It's still going to be the same guy. So check him out. His link's on our website. For now, I guess you'll get his old place. I guarantee you'll still be working with him. You click the little link, fill out a questionnaire. You'll be working with him in a matter of hours.
Thanks, Dano. All right, let's move on to the games of the week. It's week 14. We've got 2 weeks in the regular season left, which is just nuts to me. All right, Maction, starting on Tuesday, you got Kent State at Buffalo, Toledo at Akron. Moving on to Thanksgiving, Memphis at Tulane. So as you're tripping on tryptophan, you could watch Tulane Mean Green try and take it to the Memphis Tigers. That should be a good game. It'll kick at 7:30 at ESPN if you don't choose to watch the NFL game.
Damn. No Egg Bowl. That is communism, man. I don't like it.
It's new college football.
I don't like it. Not here for it.
Friday, we've got some pretty decent games on the Friday slate. So you got Oklahoma State playing Colorado. That's going to kick at noon on ESPN and ABC. Yeah, Oregon State and Boise. So the remnant of the Big 12 taking on the number 12 team in the country. Navy at East Carolina. You got Mississippi State and Ole Miss playing at 3:30 on Friday, which is crazy, but most people will have Friday off, I hope. And then, of course, you got Georgia Tech and Georgia kicking at 7:30. That should be a good game. And that's the marquee matchup for Friday night. Moving on to Saturday, you got North Texas at Temple in the American. These are mostly rivalries. Louisiana at ULM. That one kicks at noon. You've got UTSA at Army kicking at 12 o'clock on the CBS Sports Network. That should be a good game. Like, informally, that's turning into a rivalry because every time Army and UTSA play, like, it's a slobber knocker. Take the over on that one for sure. Like, rarely, if ever, do you take the over on a Service Academy game. UTSA and Army is probably the one if you do. South Carolina and Clemson. So the battle for South Carolina takes place. USC is looking good. You know, the Gamecocks have put together a pretty decent season. They look respectable. Clemson is looking good. Don't have a chance. Neither one of these teams have a chance to get into the playoffs, but this is for recruiting. So whoever wins that game probably has an edge going into recruiting next season. Got Louisville at Kentucky. You've got the battle of the U's. You got UConn and UMass kicking at noon on ESPN+. You've got the game kicking at noon on Fox. So you got the team up north versus the Buckeyes. You've got Illinois Northwesterns. They're playing in Chicago, so that should be an interesting game. I mean, those guys are both kind of so-so, but that's usually a good contest just because it's a rivalry game. Tennessee at Vandy, that should be a surprising game. Tennessee is doing well. They're doing all right. If they win against Vanderbilt, it gives them a little bit more credit to move up in the college football rankings, not by much, but if they could get to probably the number 9 or number 10 spot, maybe number 8 if they beat them pretty soundly. But we'll see what happens there. You got Duke and Wake Forest. You got the Peninsula Battle of Eastern and Western Michigan taking on each other at 1:30 on ESPN+. Arizona State kicks off at 3:30. That's actually a good game that usually doesn't come on in a decent hour, so that's going to be a good time to check into that one. North Carolina and UNC or NC State at 3:30 on the ACC Network. Miami at Syracuse at 3:30 on ESPN. Notre Dame and USC. That was going to be a high-scoring game, I think. I think that they're going to score a lot of games. Like, Miller-Mont is the kid's got a cannon. He just doesn't have a defense. They do not play complimentary football at USC whatsoever. Notre Dame looks like the better team on paper, but expect probably 65 or 70 points to get scored in that game. It's going to be a barn burner probably for three quarters, and then Notre Dame will take over with the depth on the player chart. Anyway, Iron Bowl is at 3:30 on ABC. That'll be a good one just based off of the way that Auburn played last week and Bama laid an egg against freaking OU. So, like, that was going to be a wild one. Definitely one to check out for sure. Florida and Florida State, that's a 90s matchup that used to matter. But it'll be interesting to see if Florida State can right the ship, at least in the rivalry game. They haven't been able to get up for any other game this season. Maybe they can do it against Florida. But the way that Florida's been playing, I doubt it. Washington at Oregon, that's 7:30 on NBC and Peacock. And then you got Texas and Texas A&M on ABC. If you don't have a multi-viewer, I'm sorry for you because you're going to be missing out on some great games. Go ahead, spend that extra $100 and buy that 50-inch TV on Black Friday. Set it up for Saturday so you can watch Texas A&M in Texas. Like, look, if you've never watched the Texas A&M game in person or even at like a bar with a bunch of A&M fans, it is wild. So highly encourage you to do that at some point. Texas A&M should be a bucket list visit on your college football punch list. You got a couple more games of interest. You got Marshall at James Madison kicking at 8 on ESPNU. Houston at BYU, that's at 10:15 if you want to stay up that late. Same thing with Air Force and San Diego State, that's at 10:30. And for those of you that have Spectrum pay-per-view, New Mexico at Hawaii, 11 p.m. kick. So if you are, you know, way deep into your turkey coma and you're wandering at night, turn that one on and watch the Rainbow Warriors take on the Lobos. Anyway, let's pause for a second and roll into our weekly locks.
Weekly locks.
Dano, what you got?
I went 3-0 last week. I think I am now solidly above 500 for the first time all season. It was nuts. UTSA, ECU, and Air Force all easily covered. Love it. Staying on the hot hand, ECU plus one at home against the Mids. We talked about them a lot. I don't think we need to beat this anymore, but getting a point, I'll take it. UConn minus 10 at UMass. Really hate playing a road favorite at this point in the season, but that game is like a less than an hour's drive, and UConn is an astronomically better team than UMass. I mean, way more than 10 points, in my opinion. Plus, UMass just fired their coach. They have less than $100,000 of NIL on the entire team at UMass.
Wow.
Jeez. I mean, go figure. And finally, I'm giving Notre Dame minus 7.5 at Southern Cal. I mean, Notre Dame team is firing on all cylinders right now. Something that a lot of the Notre Dame fans were saying heading into the Army game is, hey, this isn't the same team that you saw earlier in the season. And you know what? That was damn right. So that team has come together nicely.
Yeah, for sure. They're leaning in on Riley Leonard's running skills, though. I think
that's really he played. He played beautifully from the pocket against Army. I mean, yeah. I listen, they had the right, that was the right play, right? Keep him in the pocket, make him complete passes, but
yeah,
he did it pretty easily.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Joe, what about you?
I also went 3-0 last week as Arkansas State won by 7, Missouri won by 19, and let's not forget about the Kennesaw State Fighting Owls making me look smart winning outright as 9.5-point dogs. Thanks, Scrappy. I knew I could count on you. That's their mascot, in case you guys didn't know that. I'm going with 3 picks again. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Pick one is going to be Michigan State versus Rutgers minus 1.5 at home. Look, this one is pretty simple. MSU needs this game to go to a bowl, and Rutgers is very beatable. I've watched them a couple times this year, and their offense is putrid. They have home field advantage, and I like the Spartans' chances. Pick two is going to be a wild one. I got Syracuse plus 10.5 at home versus Miami. I know this is a big line, and apparently they're expecting Miami to crush Syracuse, but I've seen Miami struggle against gunslingers like Louisville, and Kyle McCord throws for about 300 yards a game. I could see this one being a one-score game, no problem. I'll take Syracuse at home and a boatload of points to keep it close. And then pick three, I promise I haven't lost my mind, is Auburn plus 11.5 at Alabama. Watching this Alabama team against Oklahoma told me one thing, and that is that they are not elite. This game means everything to Auburn, and I believe that they will keep it close enough to cover 11.5-point line. This isn't the same Alabama team that we're used to, and Auburn has been pretty tough this year, not to mention the same starting quarterback from Alabama needed a 4th-and-31 miracle touchdown to even win this game last year by one score. So I don't think they run away from Auburn in this game, and I think it's close.
All right, that's fair. Interesting. Yeah, so I went 2-1 last week. The only thing I should have just called the outright win for Georgia Tech against NC State. They covered They scored 58 total on that one. Took Boston College to win. They rolled UNC and then escaped by a hook against Iowa and Maryland. I did not expect them to score 42 points, let alone almost 42 and a half, but made it through that week. This week, I'm taking Minnesota for the outright win against Wisconsin. I think the Badgers put their last good game together of the season when they played against Oregon and kept it close. So take Minnesota for the outright win. PJ Fleck is due. I mean, look at what they're doing. They lost to Penn State by a point, and it took a trick play at the end of the game to lock that one down. So I'm going to, you know, row the boat with the Golden Gophers and call them for that right win against Wisconsin. This is the goofiest line I've ever seen, and I'm taking this. Sorry, Joe. Take the Buckeyes to cover +3.5 against Michigan. Like,
what?
What?
Yeah. I don't, that's not – Michigan's minus 20 – or Ohio State's minus 21.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Did you see that?
Like, I saw that Sunday before they actually did the calculations, clearly. Yeah.
That's not incredible. I mean, did you bet it? I hope you put $1,000 on it.
No, I did not. Right. Yeah.
They're minus 21 right now.
It should have been, and maybe it was 13.5. Maybe I freaking transposed it. But either way, like, take the Buckeyes to win big over Michigan. I'm sorry. Like, you know, Coach Day is going to run it up on them just because he's got 3 years of frustration. If they got a chance to hang 100 on them, they probably will. Unfortunately for Michigan, that's just kind of the way that it is. Take UConn and UMass to hit under 52. That seems like easy money. Mm-hmm. Although, you know, they'll win big. It's probably going to be like a 35 to 10 win, you know.
Yeah, I think that's that right. One.
And like UConn is good enough to beat UMass, not good enough to bury UMass. You know, I think they've done a pretty good job themselves.
You're wrong on that one, Rob. I'm sorry to say.
You think so?
Yeah.
All right.
I've seen UConn play. I've actually watched them.
Plus, UMass is nursing some bruises right now.
Yeah, we'll see. Plus, you know, when you lose your coach, particularly this late in the season, unless that's a serious loss of confidence. And I don't know if that's in the players too, certainly with the coaching staff, but we'll see what happens with that one. But like I said, you know, Minnesota for the outright win, Buckeyes to bury Michigan, and UConn and UMass to hit under 52.5. So we're almost at the end of the regular season, folks. We've got rivalry week and championship weekend. And then we've got the Army-Navy game afterwards, which is outside of the season for those of you guys that aren't tracking. So Army-Navy is a non-conference game, so it has no impact on the American. So you'll have, you know, one game this week, championship Saturday, the Army-Navy game, and then who knows what's going to happen with bowls. But I'm not sure how the rest of the season will close out. But if you want some analysis, join us here at the Ask for Football College Football Roundtable. We'll give you our best as we can and analysis from our perspective, and also some insights on some games that you should be watching, because we watch a lot of football amongst this crew, and we're glad to provide you with insights on what we've seen. But yeah, it's pretty crazy. Moving into championship week, we've got a couple games that'll be picking up around there, but for the most part, this is the week 14. 2 weeks to go, and then we got playoffs, and then the bowl game stretch. So for the team here at the College Football Roundtable, I'm your host, Rob, the Angry Colonel in Fayetteville, North Carolina. We got Dano Ikebesa calling to you out of coastal Connecticut, and Trigger Joe from the home of the Big House. And this has been the Ask for Football College Football Roundtable. We will see you guys next week. And as always, beat UTSA.
Beat them.
Thanks for joining us on the Ask for Football College Football Roundtable. Special thanks to our sponsor, Jocelyn Bradley Real Estate. If you're buying or selling, reach out to Jocelyn for expert service. If you enjoy the show, please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/askforfootball. Your support will help keep the lights on and bring in more great content. Plus, you'll get access to exclusive perks and behind-the-scenes extras. Thanks for being a part of the Ask for Football community. Go Army, beat Navy, and we'll catch you guys next week.